Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 413 of the Roguecast, recorded April 18th, 2023. Terrence Stamps. Hello and welcome to our Sleep Deprived podcast.
We determined earlier today that none of us really slept much last night.
Between the three of us, we might have gotten 8 hours.
Yes. Which means, if you've listened before, you know that occasionally things get giddy.
Right.
Things get weird.
We said it might be a low-energy podcast, and I believe instead it's going to be a giddy podcast.
Yes. We'll see how things
go.
We'll
see how it goes.
That's a flip of the coin.
One of us starts to nod off, the other to slap the shit out of them.
Yeah.
We'll just see what happens.
Yeah. All right. So, new game stuff this week. Worth noting that we got the Magic March of the Machines stuff in.
Yep.
It's the ending the current cycle.
Yep.
So we got commander decks, we got starters, set boosters, draft
bundles.
Right. Basically, I can't remember if we talked about this the previous week when it was coming up, but we get a week jump on the formal release date, which would otherwise be this coming Friday.
Yep.
2 days from now, probably, as you're hearing this. And the full line is available. It used to be just limited stuff. They had a few things available, the opening weekend only. Now it's all available.
It's everything.
So, dive right on into the new set.
We also got some new stuff from Asmodee. We got the Camel Up card game. I've not a chance to play this yet, but Camel Up is like a very popular racing game.
Uh-huh.
This is the card game version.
A lot of times they're really clever about how they adapt some of the basic mechanics for some of these games to a much smaller game, a two-player game or something that. So,
we'll talk about that in the topics. I've actually had one that I played.
Every reason to believe they will pull it off.
And then we got Hats, which is a reprint of a game that's been out of print for a while.
I don't know anything about this.
It looked cool. I don't remember the premise.
I assume you're vying for different hats.
I guess. And then there's a game called Spirits of the Forest, which I also don't know much about.
That's a little small game, right?
Yes.
I was looking at it, and it intrigued me on its aesthetics alone, but I have not had a chance to figure out what its deal is. I want to check it out.
Dave loves the nature.
I do like the nature stuff.
We have summer events coming up. So on May 6th, which is about 2-3 weeks out?
Ish, yeah.
Yeah.
We have Free Comic Book Day. We've got a bunch of free comics. They are stuffed in every cranny of the store right now.
Yep.
We will break them all out.
Do we have enough room to set up tables for that? How did we even do that last year?
We did it last year. We can do it again this year.
Yeah. we squished a few aisles down.
We squished things.
Yeah, we managed to keep it very shoppable last year, so that it wasn't... I think we were like, oh, this is a little tighter than we normally have it, but I don't think anybody was off put.
No, nobody said anything.
Yeah, and if they did, we'd kill them.
Right. And then Free RPG Day is June 24th, and we're going to do our board game day on July 15th.
Board game day is going to be kind of like demos. You and John, I know Randy, are going to like be running some demos throughout.
Yep.
A bunch of different games that I think are, you know, y'all are going to pick some stuff that's very approachable, but also probably some of the big ones.
Yep.
I know, just as an example of one you said very likely to make the cut is the Star Wars deck building game.
Yeah, I want to show off the Star Wars deck building game.
And that's like, you know, deck building games are always pretty quick to get into. It's one of the reasons I like them. And if you've played other deck building games, you're going to kind of understand the basics of this right out of the gate. And it's a cool theme, so that's going to be cool.
And then we are selling tickets for the Greater Austin Comic Con, which is happening in mid-June, and you can get the tickets. We'll have free kids tickets on Free Comic Book Day as well. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk comics for the week of April 19th, and let's start with the Dawn of DC's Superboy, the Man of Tomorrow.
Yeah, Dawn of DC, you know, of course, is their new initiative. And it's they're kind of rolling it out more slowly. It's not like when like New 52 hit or whatever, and it was like in one night, you know, like on one Wednesday, New Comic Wednesday, then that they're going to hit you with like 10 or 12 or 15 of them or whatever. Been like it's mainly been the Superman books, so Action, Superman, and now Superboy.
But we're coming up on a few other ones,
right? I know that Waiting in the Wings soon, or will be Flash and Green Arrow and some of the others. But, so I have not gotten around to this. Y'all told me just a little bit about it. As I understand it, as we were talking about the other day, the Superman family, which includes some of the most powerful dudes there are, kind of feel like, what happens is Superboy sort of feels like he's got they've got Metropolis locked down. They know what's up.
This is also the book that won the vote, right?
Yes, there was some kind of vote-off, that's right.
Yeah, and people had to vote on which book they wanted, and this one was the one that everybody wanted. They wanted Connor back on his own.
Yep.
And I think this has got a pretty cool premise. Connor is feeling a little afloat.
Well, Connor, like, nobody remembers him except for Kara and Superman, because he comes from, like, the pre-New 52 universe or something, right?
Oh, no. People know who they are.
But he was like, he says something to them, like, he's not supposed to be in this universe.
I mean, he was in another one.
He said, this is not the world I left. Reality got yes. Rewritten about me. Yeah.
So,
but he's
so
back. People know who. I mean,
we're just trying to figure: is this the same Connor as the one that we think of as black T-shirt Connor?
Yeah.
Kent? Literally the same one. He looks more like the '90s incarnation when he was a little younger.
So here's the thing: he says, just when you've accepted who you are, you wake up in a new universe where you never existed. At least the two greatest people in the world remember who I am, which implies to me that other people don't remember who he is.
Weird.
Grandpa can't remember. Did you skim over that?
It's kind of a
big deal.
Because in every other incarnation I've seen of Superboy recently, everyone knows who he is.
Yeah,
so
I think it
felt like a weird thing to.
Well, that's the thing. I think this
maybe
is
something
not,
just happened.
I think this is not that Superboy. I think this is not the Connor Kent who's in Geoff Johns' Teen Titans and all that.
Well, no,
this
but I mean, in the Superman books, just of the Dawn of DC, he's there as well, and everyone knows who he is.
I don't think it's the same Connor Kent. I think this is another Alder World Connor Kent.
We'll puzzle that out in the weeks to come. But y'all tell me what is. So he's not sticking around in Metropolis. What happens?
Right. So he's like, well, Metropolis is covered. So he goes to the Fortress of Solitude. Asks Kellex, like, well, find me some trouble I can deal with on Earth. And it's like, oh, well, this one's being taken care of by the Super People. This one's being taken out of the Justice League. Teen Titans have this covered. He's like, okay, how about Galactic? And he finds a planet out in space that needs him, and they have Dominators are like sending super powered bad guys, and he goes off to this planet to save them and be. Super
I need to check that out. The Dominators are one of those aliens I kind of like.
Yep.
They have a history, especially with the Legion of Superheroes, but they were introduced way back in DC Invasion as the masterminds of the big alien invasion in the late 80s.
Yeah.
But they're one of the big bads of DC's aliens.
Yeah. Or this may be a lost story between, because it does say specifically it takes place before Action Comics number 1051 or whatever was it start. Yeah, so this may be this may be like a miniseries that shows us how Connor got to that point.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, it's all out in space, and it's him trying to be Superboy, and he's using his tactile telekinesis, which is pretty cool. And he's in his classic 90s costume, also pretty cool.
It's a good costume. And the art looked good, whoever that was.
The art's good, and it's fun. Yeah.
I think Superman books have been on a bit of a roll lately, if you've been enjoying that, this is probably one worth checking out.
In fact, Superman number 3 this week brings that first story arc to kind of a close.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I guess, I wonder, you know, it's going to get collected in probably a 6-issue trade paperback ultimately.
Yeah.
I wonder what's going to kind of be the other story.
Yes.
Two 3-issue stories I kind of like better than one 6-issue story.
It's actually all Superman doing laundry.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Super laundry.
Well, wouldn't he do it super fast and be over in like a page?
Well, see, when you're doing laundry for super people, you have to do it at regular speed.
I don't know if that makes sense.
He can't make the dryer go faster.
He can't make the dryer go faster.
He still has to sit. I mean, he can't use his heat vision to heat it up. That would be
weird. If I was only seeing how Clark Kent waste time, does he read a book? Does he end up texting people?
He just listens to podcasts. It's actually 3 issues of him listening to podcasts.
You know what I think he's doing? I think he's grudgingly listening to Jimmy Olsen's lame Metropolis pop culture podcast.
It's actually worse than that. Jimmy's like super obsessed with like stamp collecting or something. It's this podcast.
He's like,
Jimmy, I'll listen as soon as I get a minute. Oh. Damn it.
He's like, oh, that's cool, Mr. Kent. I'll call you later on tonight. Okay. Okay. I'll ask you how it was.
This is Turtle Boy's Philately Podcast. Anyway, I went off the rails a little bit there.
What are we talking about?
Jimmy Olsen's Stamp Collecting Podcast, apparently.
Why are we talking about that?
I don't know why. You were saying you like 3-issue story arcs, and then I went off in that whole thing.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about what he does. Right.
Yep. Anyway, Superman has been pretty good. Superboy Man of Tomorrow is pretty good. There's a kind of weirder DC book this week, the DC Silent Tales.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you say weird, but this is like a fun book.
Yeah.
This is artist Gustavo Duarte, is that
I think that's the name, yeah.
But maybe you say Duarte.
Or maybe you say Duarte.
Say it right.
I was looking for my copy, but I think Dave stole mine.
I probably did. I think I put it back out on the show.
We don't have a lot.
Oh, right. Yeah. But
it's like four or five single short stories, all silent.
Yep.
I think even like fun web comics, yeah. Or if you've ever read Sergio Aragonés's silent comics for anything he does, that's his thing.
But there's a great Harley Quinn story in there. There's a weird Lobo story, but it's interesting.
Yeah. And there is a Clark Kent story. Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not doing laundry in it, is he?
But he is listening to podcasts, I think.
Is he really?
Somebody is doing laundry in it.
Oh, is
now
he?
That I'm thinking about it.
Oh, maybe he. Maybe that was on your brain.
I didn't read that story.
He might be.
Somehow,
Osmosis.
His art is really good. Like, if you've ever seen just some of the like the sort of more fun and lighthearted artists who do web comics and stuff like that, but like have really high craft levels. He's probably one of those guys.
Marvel has a Warlock Rebirth series that came out this week.
Yep.
This is by Ron Mars and Ron Lim. It's sort of a sequel to. Is it set in the 90s? Is it a throwback? Or is
it is. Okay. It is. So I can tell you what happened. I've read the Warlock. I decided I don't know anything about Warlock, and I wanted to read this.
That so has the Jenna's Vale in it too.
If people
I think.
Remember the Infinity Watch, which yep. I only vaguely do, but I guess after Infinity Gauntlet, there were some superhero cosmic type heroes, yeah. including Gamora and Pip the Troll. And Adam Warlock, who stuck together to keep bad stuff from happening again.
They each were given an Infinity Gem.
Yep. And here, Jenis Vell, the son of the original Captain Marvel in, Mar-Vell.
Yep. Mar-Vell.
Who is deceased. He's come to Earth to, like, sort of... I think he's trying to, like, learn about the legacy of his dad. And apparently the Infinity Watch is set up on... Was it Monster Island?
Monster Island, yeah.
Which, that sounds like that was already a thing in the 90s, maybe. And so he tussles with some of the monsters there, some of the weird monsters, but ultimately, he runs into the Infinity Watch people, except for Adam Warlock. They kind of recap his origin for him and like tell him a little bit about who the guy he's going to meet. And then it turns out that there is a weird scheme happening. Everybody knows that Adam Warlock's main thing is the cocoon.
Yep.
When he's injured or whatever, he's reborn. He goes into this energy cocoon and is reborn. He's going to somehow show up in the Marvel movie soon.
Do you think Warlock...
I mean, he has.
Do you think Warlock ever goes into his cocoon to just listen to podcasts in peace?
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
Do you think he listens to Jimmy Olsen's stamp collecting podcast?
That's a different universe, Randy. That's DC.
Oh, yeah,
DC
right.
And Marvel are actually different settings.
You don't think he has a cross-dimensional podcast device?
He might.
He certainly does laundry in his cocoon.
Anyway, There's a cocoon formed in this, only Adam Warlock is, like, not inside it, and he's like, what's going on?
That's right, and so that's outside the cocoon, which is a rarity.
The premise.
This is not my cocoon.
Anyway, these throwbacks, you know, Ron Lim was the guy who drew the original, like, Infinity Gauntlet, yeah. or some of that, and a lot of the Silver Surfers that led up to it. And Ron Mars was the guy, did he write some Silver Surfer stuff in the 90s? Or some of the Infinity Watch?
He did-ish. He did the Infinity Sword and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that originally him?
Infinity Watch?
Yeah.
Well, Jim Starlin wrote the Infinity Gauntlet.
Right.
Ron Mars must have done something in that
Ron Mars did. I think he followed up. I think he took over Silver Surfer after.
Yeah.
I mean, I mainly know him as the guy who, created
Kyle Rayner.
At DC, which is a different universe. That's a separate one.
Do you think Kyle Rayner listens to Jimmy Olsen's Stamp Collecting Podcast?
Probably.
Yes.
He's an artist. You know that guy listens to podcasts.
Yeah, he's got it going on while he's drawing stuff, while he's drawing nude women.
Yeah.
Because he's a weirdo.
He's a weirdo.
Anyway, I kind of liked the Warlock Rebirth thing as a throwback to, in some ways, a simpler time.
It does. I was reading, I gave a little flip through there, and it does feel like a throwback to that time.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, Marvel's kind of been doing this with the Venom Lethal Protector and the Grey Hulk stuff.
Yeah.
If you were a 90s kid, it's actually pretty cool that they're kind of doing this.
They didn't do that for us in the 80s.
Yeah,
we had classic X-Men, but
the good thing is the 80s had the best comics.
Yes,
it was the peak of the X-Men. It was Roger Stern on Spider-Man, Walt Simonson on Thor, John Byrne on FF.
10 or 20 years ago, shouldn't we have been getting all of these with the 80s comics? Isn't that how nostalgia works?
Yeah, no, we didn't. They overran it. The 80s comics were so good they couldn't. The nostalgia couldn't match it.
It's true.
90s comics sometimes sucked. And so that's a nostalgia they can pull off.
Anyway, Marie Warlock, which is a throwback to comics that sucked. No, Infinity Watch is a fun comic.
Actually, I completely skipped it in the era, yeah. But I kind of like the idea, yeah. Frankly.
It is a good idea. Yeah. Every one of them had a gem. I mean, it's a proto-Guardians in a way, because it has
absolutely.
Drax. It's got Gamora.
Yep.
It doesn't have Rocket and Groot, but like...
But Pip the Troll kind of serves that. He's like, yeah. A little cigar-smoking little wise-ass.
And he got,
looks
like
he looks like Pan the Goat
he's
God.
He's got like space gem. I think he can teleport them all over the place.
Yep.
Yep.
And I forget which gems Gamora and Drax had, but like after Infinity War, they were entrusted with the five gems to keep together as a team, but not in one gauntlet because you can't have it in one gauntlet.
Right. Problem.
Definitely,
all your eggs are in one basket.
Right.
All your stones are in one gauntlet, as yes. The saying goes.
As the saying goes.
oh dear.
All right. We have that's actually kind of all the big stuff from DC and Marvel.
You know, did we mention that there's a second issue of Hallows Eve?
No, I was going to say, there's definitely some second issues.
Yeah, yeah. That's
Hallows Eve gets a second issue. That is the story that we got the first printing. Or
it's a Spider-Man spin-off character, but she seems pretty cool. She has magical masks, a little like the masks in Halloween 3, mm-hmm. Season of the Witch.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, she actually becomes what mask she wears. She puts on a werewolf mask, she becomes a werewolf. It's a fun character, and she's more of an outlaw type character. Outlaw
she's
hero.
She's the girlfriend or wife of Ben Reilly. Ben Reilly.
Girlfriend.
Yep. Girlfriend.
And she got these masks from
Limbo. Don't rush them. They're young.
They're young and in two different dimensions.
They're not like, what's her name from Stranger Things getting married at 19. She got married at 19.
Who got married? Oh,
11.
11. Millie Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
Not 11, but the actress who plays her.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no marriage in Stranger Things I remember.
I hope not.
Demogorgon got married to Vecna.
There's only Demogorgons and Death.
Which is D&D.
Yeah.
So there's also a second issue, or there's penultimate issue of Punisher, number 11.
Which I didn't realize was a miniseries.
Yeah, apparently a miniseries.
But apparently so.
And then the second story arc of She-Hulk ends with number 12, which is also technically legacy numbering 175, which means it gets two stories in this. And the backup story is like Jen having a book club meeting with a bunch of people you would recognize, like the Wasp.
It was pretty amazing.
And it was a lot of fun.
It's really good. Also, you know, Nick, what you were telling me about Punisher, it was pretty interesting. We all know that they're kind of doing some heavy rethinking of the Punisher, I think, right now.
Yeah?
Now, the thing he sold you is, like, the last page of the issue.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So don't spoil.
Well, but we can say the character who came back, like, in the first issue.
Yeah.
We can say who that is, right?
Yeah.
So Punisher's wife was mystically resurrected, like, by the Hand.
Yep.
And that's their exchange for him to help them out.
Yes.
And he's trying to, I guess, try to use the Hand for good.
Yep.
Instead of their usual ninja evil.
And being corrupted by the Beast. And,
yep.
Sure.
You know.
Yep.
Anyway, suffice to say, there is an interesting development of stuff, the thing with his wife and stuff, in this one. And when you told me about it, Nick, I was like, oh, whoa, that's pretty interesting.
I think this is a rethink of the Punisher that we need.
I think so, too.
And then we got the second issue of No One, the Image, the Titan Radiant Black Universe.
Yep.
Right. This is the one that kind of, at least, was somewhat based around some murder mystery stuff.
Yeah, there's also a podcast.
Right, an actual literal podcast, probably better than Jimmy Olsen's shitty podcast.
We don't know. Jimmy Olsen might do a great stamp collecting podcast. Stampcast.
Well, he'd be like, yeah, I got these alternate Earth ones from the Phantom Zone.
Yep.
And he's like, you're not going to be able to find these.
That's pretty rare.
What would his podcast be called?
See, I think Stampcast is good, but it's something, the
super
stamp
philately?
Collecting is called philately? Philately?
Oh,
I forget.
Like, I guess so.
It's a weird word.
Do you know you know the actor who played Zod in
Terrence Stamp?
Mm-hmm. Just saying. That's what I call it. I call it Terrence Stamps.
Terrence Stamps. An homage to
Yeah,
God.
Now, in-universe, I don't know that he knows who Terrence Stamp is. Superman 2 probably does not exist as a movie.
What if it does? What if they made those movies? Superman's like, oh, this is so embarrassing.
Well, Jimmy Olsen probably visited our world and saw those movies.
Yeah.
And
that's true. Jimmy Olsen would have seen
Yes. Jimmy Olsen has definitely seen the Superman movies.
He, he was the original Rick Jones.
He was.
A.K.A. superhero sidekick who's seen it all.
Yep.
Have they ever managed to, among the various Marvel DC crossovers, had Rick Jones and Jimmy Olsen meet?
I was wondering that. I don't think they have.
And become boyfriends?
I believe Rick Jones and Snapper Carr would be the people they'd probably put together.
No, nobody knows who Snapper Carr is.
Some
unless you're
do.
No, weirdos who read JSA do.
It was a Justice League book, Dave.
I know, but you know it's the people who read JSA, which
no,
is me,
know,
by
know,
the way. That's,
Ma
that's why I can say it. Oh, that's true. They know, yeah, they know Red Tornado.
I don't know the Ma Hunkle and J.J. Jameson should, like, go on a date.
But like, look, the deal, like, Snapper Carr was there for the Justice League in the original days, but, like, Jimmy Olsen goes on tons of more adventures, and Rick Jones goes on more adventures.
It's true.
They need to have an adventure.
Peter David should write a miniseries of Jimmy Olsen and, yeah.
Yeah.
Rick Jones. I like it.
But I kind of want the more modern dialogue. I want it to be like James Tynion or something like that.
That's fair. That's fair.
But I don't want it to be horror necessarily,
here,
so...
I'll give you how about a Tom King one?
Yeah, Tom King can do it.
If the audience could see my face right now, you would see murder.
If the audience has been listening, they know how both you and I feel about Tom King.
I mean, it's definitely going to be some murdering of animals.
Oh, yeah, yes. Comet, Beppo the Super Monkey is going to get offed.
I was thinking Comet the Horse.
Comet the Horse,
you know,
also, yeah. Tom King loves murdering horses.
He's like, there's a whole movie about shooting horses. I love it. All right, let's move on.
Sure, to what I have no idea.
We have there's some notable issue number ones from indie places.
There are. So the Expanse Dragon's Tooth is a, I believe, a continuation of the Expanse after the sci-fi series ends.
Oh, okay.
It's written by Andy Diggle. Has some nice art. It's a boom book. I think it's a 12
issue. Are you saying it expands on the Expanse?
Expands on the Expanse. I really like the Expanse. This is a lot of the, this is a story about the Rocinante doing some cleanup after.
The what?
The Rocinante is the ship.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're exploring some like privateer actions that are going on in the wake of all the events of the Expanse. If you like the Expanse, you might want to read this.
Sure.
There's an image book called Terror War by Saladin Ahmed, art by Dave Acosta. It's a sort of
dystopian future city, but it's one of these that has like a veneer of a utopia.
Yeah.
They're like, everything's great. Welcome to whatever it's called, something city, Blue City. Yeah. But there is a dark secret of it where people's fears manifest into like literal creatures.
Big giant kaiju type.
I can only say a little like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
A little bit. And then the lead characters are part of this unit that actually can see and fight. They can make weird brain bullets that can kill them.
Yeah, it's like you could make psychic projection bullets that can be one of the only things that can destroy the creatures of people's
mind.
They're
like bounty hunters who kill people's nightmares before they stomp on them.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a very weird high concept, but it's interesting, and the first issue's a lot of fun.
But is it any weirder than the other one we're about to talk to
no.
about?
All eight eyes.
All this is, eight eyes.
This is the
What
story,
has eight eyes? Spiders.
I was going to say the Fantastic Four has eight eyes.
Damn it, Randy. You got me on a technicality. But this is a book about giant spiders.
Yeah.
Not giant spiders like Fight Godzilla style,
no.
For the most part.
They're
it
like
is more
doggy sized.
More dog to horse size.
And they're
which is
people.
Actually would be a pretty bad size to run into.
And
yeah.
there's a guy who basically he's on the edge of homelessness. He runs into an actual homeless guy who seems to have killed someone, but in fact killed the spider that killed the dude. And then there's a question of like the homeless guy basically walks through this secret history of like these spiders are around, nobody sees them. And
yep.
you guys think it is a and it is a metaphor for like homelessness and being ignored. And I believe it to be sort of a people can't actually see them unless they're a certain person.
Like there's
like
literally
they,
like
they
only
live,
certain
they
people.
Live style.
Right. I don't think that's the case, but like both of those could accomplish the same thematic still.
Except I'm more interested in the version that I read.
Right. You need to have a version because that was the one part that strained credulity a little bit, that there could be any giant spiders at all that would not immediately be on YouTube.
Right.
But by the way, the art on that was fantastic.
Art is really good.
They are, you know, I think that's important for a monster comic. The monster needs to look really dope. These spiders
Kowalski.
Look gross and cool. And, you know, I kind of need a second issue to make up my mind, but I do sort of like the idea of being possibly inducted into a secret war against underground spiders living in our cities.
Good to see
spider
you,
horror is always good.
Nick was talking about arachnophobia earlier, a
yeah.
Buzz movie of 1990,
I can't
which was before all of you were born. but it was a time that existed.
Jeff Daniels and John Goodman. It's a really good movie.
It's a fun movie. I think we can all agree.
Better
and
than the movie Eight-Legged Freaks with David Arquette.
I haven't seen that one.
I haven't
that was
either,
not a Buzz movie. I only watch Buzz Spider movies.
Not a huge bar to clear, I bet.
No, not really. But I was just trying to think of other spider themed horror things.
Well, you gotta go back to like Spider-Man 2.
If you go back to like the 50s, Nick, there's like a million giant tarantula movies.
Oh,
and things
yeah.
like
there's
that.
Kingdom of the Spiders starring William Shatner.
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't aware of this.
It's real bad.
I'm sure.
I watched it on USA Up All Night with Gilbert Gottfried.
Wasn't there like a cute lady chick too? Also, was she part of that or
she was post Gilbert Gottfried?
Okay, but they always had a host.
Mm-hmm.
I somewhat missed those strange campy days.
Me too.
Of the what I guess 80s
and
90s. I saw
some weird movies on that.
I think there are still some like horror hosts out there like that.
Joe Bob Briggs is doing.
Joe Bob Briggs is the big one. Yeah.
But I mean the.
But occasionally I hear about Svengoolie. And I feel like there might even be some other one in
but
there.
But everything is just streaming or on demand. There's no, like...
I know. Like, there's no one that we can all watch...
2 a.m.
For the weirdos.
Yeah.
There was a... Gremlins 2 had the Uncle Fred vampire guy.
Yeah. Had that was a lot of fun.
Great line where he's like, people watch... He's like, people don't watch these shows anymore. People wake at 2 a.m. aren't... they aren't scared of monsters. They're scared of sobering up and finding work.
Yeah. Yep.
Which was funny to me because when I watched it, it was 2 a.m.
Hey, well...
why that movie got to be getting so truthful?
You bring up a point. Gremlins 2 also has a spider gremlin.
That's right. It does.
Okay. We're going to allow it to affiliate with the spider movies, but we do not grant it the rank of master.
Arachnophobia is the master.
Obviously.
All right. And then a couple good trades. Guardians of the Galaxy by Al Ewing. They're gearing up for Guardians 3 and putting some of the Guardians stuff back in print.
Yeah. Randy, you and I were talking about this. I think that people might have gotten a little Guardians burnout at some point.
I think so, too. But this
I
run
think
started
we did,
off well.
But this run was a good one that started off well. We were talking about the series that started last week was good. Had a good first issue.
Yep.
The holiday special that they did for Disney Plus was really good.
Super
good.
Yep.
And I'm like... if you know, if ever there was a time that would be, we were like, we need to go back and read the rest of this run from Al Ewing because the time is obviously right for Guardians stuff.
Right.
And they have been reprinting more, putting out more Guardians trades, some character focused ones and stuff like that. But yeah, I think if you like us, find yourself feeling that Guardians vibe, this and other trades are back in print or in print.
And Shirtless Bear Fighter is back.
That's actually always a cause for celebration.
Yeah, that's really good.
The War on Bearer returns.
It's hard to explain how funny this book is.
Yeah.
You have to see it.
You have to just go ahead and flip through it. It's one of those really funny comics. He's a shirtless bear fighter. Sometimes he's occasionally been known to run around naked and the comic has to pixelate his junk.
Yes, because he has giant junk.
He has giant junk while he fights the bears.
He was raised by bears.
Yep.
But bears are mean and there's a conspiracy.
They're
of bears.
His arch enemies.
Yep.
But he'll also fight anything from like tardigrade bears to like all variety. And yes, there's even some humor surrounding the other kind of bears that you might find at a club.
Yep. Shirtless Bear Fighter is always funny and I'm glad to have it collected.
Yeah.
I just want to mention two books that came out last week that I didn't get to talk to for just a moment.
We talked about it already, Nick.
I don't care.
You abandoned us, Nick.
I did.
For vacation.
For vacation. But The Seasons Have Teeth, if you have not read
did you
this,
like that, Nick?
I loved it.
Yeah,
I thought it was one of...
I talked that up last week.
It is kind of melancholy and creepy and just really, really
well-told
story.
It does a neat job of dropping you in a world that, you know, on its surface kind of looks like our world... But it is this world where it's almost like, you know, you get that sense of, like, air raid sirens going off. The same way you would get, like, a hurricane evacuation warning is what is going on because a season is coming.
Yes.
They're like, spring is about to happen. Get out of the city now. There's going to be creatures inside of the front.
And then
this
it feels
is how
like,
I feel about winter, by the way.
And this,
that's, I think, it is in some ways, it's literalizing those feelings people
and then
have.
It feels like Guy Davis drew some creepy-ass things to attack you with seasons.
Last week had a lot of good spooky comics.
And I will say, the other one, which is also spooky, which I think we still have, World Tree.
Yeah, we're almost out of it.
We're almost out, but if you...
James Tinian's new
book. If you want a first issue that's going to knock your socks off...
It's very creepy.
It is creepy,
truly disturbing.
It's very disturbing, but really freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that also has a neat premise, because I like the idea of, like... I mean, like... Of basically, like, a hidden, like, supernatural under structure of like the internet.
Yeah, the undernet.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. Yeah.
Yep. But that, I just wanted to talk those up because I didn't get to talk about them, and I think all they're right, both we'll winners.
Allow Randy, cut that later. We got to make this podcast lean and mean.
Yes.
Not talk about anything weird.
Yeah, anyway, we'll be back with more about Jimmy Olsen's stamp podcast.
Terrence Stamps.
Terrence Stamps. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to talk about news for the week. All right, as we go into this, there's quite a few trailers to talk about this week. Several horror trailers and a couple sort of like not horror trailers.
Right, yeah, there's even like an all ages sort of one.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start off by talking about some horror trailers. Let's talk about Last Voyage of the Demeter, which is the Demeter is the ship that brought Dracula to America.
In Bram Stoker's original novel.
No, I mean in real life.
Oh, shit.
That's how he got here.
Actually, one of the coolest things about the novel is how real it feels because it's all told through like journal entries, newspaper clippings, and stuff like that. And so you kind of feel like you are piecing together the story. It's almost like the found footage of its day.
Yeah.
I was also talking about this with Dave the other day, and the fact that I can't think of another movie that takes a chapter from a book and makes an entire movie out of it.
Yeah.
I was telling, I believe there's at least one other notable example I can that exists, but I'm drawing a blank on it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a chapter from Huck Finn or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, we'll figure it out. Russell Sinclair, if you're out there listening to us and you can think of any book chapters that were turned into entire movies, please let us know.
But I think, this is a great conceit. I mean, like, the idea of this voyage from Dracula's homeland to America.
So just real quick, what happens in the book is... he's wanting to leave the old world of like Transylvania and Romania and stuff like that and come to the modern city of England and begin his vampirism there, but he needs to have his like coffins and with dirt from his homeland delivered and stuff. He's got to survive on that. And in the book, we only find out, I think they show the journal entry of the ship's captain.
Yeah.
And we also see an article from the newspaper about it. The article tells us that the ship like is found like crashed on the rocks of England. And it, I guess, is everybody missing or dead?
I thought they were all dead.
I thought they were dead, but they could have been missing.
I can't remember. It's I know been a the long ship time. Captain himself is lashed to the wheel, like tied to it, like he was like trying desperately to stay alive, and his throat is like cut or vampire slashed.
And
or
the
whatever.
Captain in this movie is played by the actor, which I can't think of his name, but he played Ser Davos on Game of Thrones,
which I think everybody at this point knows.
Yes.
He's a good call to do this. He's got the mutton chops. He's got the vibe.
He's a surly captain.
He has Sea Captain written all over him. And, this is going to tell the tale of the doomed passengers. Although I think I have figured out ways in which the events of the book can still be exactly as they were, but there can be some survivors.
Yeah. I also appreciated their Terminator call and response of the ship being clear and the passages being clear.
Why do you call it Terminator?
Because it was like, dun-dun.
Oh, it sounded like the beat from Terminator.
Yes.
Well, I think what he's referencing is the we used to do the
as
a call and response.
Yes,
but so you see, there's a few key characters. There's like there's the ship captain. There's a doctor from like Oxford, Cambridge, Princeton, one of those places.
Yep.
There's a woman like who's Romanian who's clearly going to be kind of in the know.
She calls him Dracula.
She knows the deal. There's a little kid. There's a dog we're hoping doesn't die.
Right.
And there's something, of course, dark and terrifying below the decks. And it's not just like literally like Dracula loose, but I think there's weird stuff like there's storms, there's rats, there's strange fogs. There's going to be lots of things happening other than just Dracula pops up.
But Dracula popping up, he looks cool.
He does. He's more feral looking. He looks almost
Nosferatu looking.
He's Nosferatu. He's bat like at times, like a giant. He's got the bat wings and things stretching from his arms.
We should also say that this is a notable movie because
the director,
which we're blanking on his name.
Yeah.
But we've liked all of his movies.
Yep. He did Troll Hunter. He did...
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
And Autopsy of Jane Doe.
All of
which are good movies.
And you know what? Those are all very different movies.
Mm-hmm.
So Troll Hunter is kind of like a fun found footage movie that's got actually a lot of laughs in it, but is actually a very good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is like a good, like, I think, teen horror movie. And then you got Autopsy of Jane Doe, which is kind of like the most standard horror movie of them, but has a pretty unique premise that literally it takes place in one night at like a morgue where an autopsy is being performed, and there's like weird arcane messages and stuff on the organs inside the body that reveals some terrible thing that's happened. And it's pretty cool.
All three of those movies I would definitely recommend if you haven't watched. You should watch.
Trollhunter, y'all remember, that was we took our guests, our very first All Ages Awesomeness event. At like 11 o'clock at night on a whim, we all decided to go, despite the fact we all had to be up at 9 in the morning the next day.
It was both a good movie and a bad idea in a lot of ways.
But it was super fun. I will always have fond memories of it.
And I have a special thing for Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I think it's one of the best like teen kind of horror movies that there are. So here's the weird thing, is I thought this was a good trailer.
It's okay.
Maybe showed a bit too much, but didn't wow me. But I was realizing none of those ones had trailers that particularly wowed me either.
Yeah.
I think I was curious about some of them. But it was, they were all about the execution, and the, like, this guy is, his track record is enough that I will almost certainly see this.
Yeah, 3 for 3 is pretty solid.
Yep.
Then we saw the trailer for the new A24, Talk to Me.
Oh, man.
We got another urban legend.
Yeah. A24 trailers are, like, basically have the creepiest trailers. Yeah. When they do horror, you're always like, you can tell, oh, this is going to be disturbing horror.
Yeah. Did A24 do St. Maud? Was that them?
Yes.
That trailer I saw 100 times, and it creeped me out every time.
Yes. So this one revolves around some, what looks like a new urban legend kind of thing, or maybe like a... That's like... It feels like the people there know about it. It's about like, what, college kids?
Yeah.
They're having a party. There's clearly this urban legend type thing they know of, and it revolves around an artifact that's like a hand, like a little hand statue.
I think it's a corpse hand. If I'm not mistaken.
Did it have like markings on it, like it letters and stuff, like arcane magic stuff?
And you basically
put your hand in the hand of the
you
hand,
hold the hand,
and you say some words. And we don't know exactly, but some sort of somebody from beyond will talk through you.
It's basically like you are seeing beyond.
Yeah, you get a glimpse of the afterlife.
Right. And there's this girl who's, like, her mother's died, and so she's got some emotions caught up in that, and it seems like she saw her.
Yeah.
And there's also scary things, of course. It's edited in such a way that I thought they did a pretty good job of not giving away too much.
Yeah.
And not even really fully giving away the premise.
But things go... It looks like
things
bad.
Go bad. The phrase I think mentioned at some point is, "What if we opened the door but didn't shut behind us?" Anyway, which is something I kind of always like. That really good found footage horror movie Host during the pandemic kind of did that. You accidentally created an opportunity for some sort of malign spirits from beyond to do something very bad.
You said horror movie Host, and you meant the horror movie that is named Host. But I heard horror movie Host, and I was like,
Elvira?
You mean like Svengoolie?
Svengoolie? Yeah, the most terrifying, one of the greatest horror things I've ever seen, Randy, is Svengoolie.
I think of the three that we watched today, this is the one I'm most excited for, although the next one is a very well put together trailer.
Randy, whatever is the next one, make it something else. And make Nick look like a fool.
The next one is Boogeyman.
Yeah. This is based off of the short story Boogeyman by Stephen King.
His Night Shift, his like, kind of iconic first.
Although I want to say based on in quotation marks because it looks like there's scene.
The short story is basically it's like a therapist talking to someone who's scared of a creature in the
that is like killed.
It's all in like the therapy
right.
session.
Yes. And I will say this is like the kind of the dark subject matter. It's all about child loss.
Yeah.
He's got like, and sort of, I think, fears of parents have about things like crib death. Like, I don't know if there's any nicer way to say that now. It's such an awful sounding term, but that's what it is.
Sudden infant death syndrome.
Yes, SIDS. But he's like, oh, that's what the doctors say it was. He's like, but I know it was that thing in the closet. That he's never seen, but he's seen it, like, in his peripheral vision.
It's one of those King, very punchy short stories that has a great
memorable ending. This is not told from the person. It's not a therapy session. It's not told from the point of view of the dad.
But there is...
And the trailer does say, like, from the mind of Stephen King. Yeah, so it's more, like, inspired by, not... It's not adept.
And I will say there is a therapy session in the beginning of the trailer,
which is very scary.
I'm like, I would not go to that therapist.
No, what? No. Yeah, she's like, see, it's not scary at all. I'm like, this is the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Freaking blinking red light of death. Yep. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's very scary.
So what you've got are they are a mom, her daughter.
Oh, was it a mom? I thought it was like an older sibling.
Or were they
sibling.
Sisters? I think they said sisters at some point.
Yeah, I think it was
she's
an older
like,
sibling.
It's you, your sister, and me, or whatever.
And their father, played by Chris Messina?
Chris Messina. From Mindy Project, where I know him from.
Newsroom is where I
know him. Oh, Newsroom, that makes sense. Yeah, that's right. He was the son who was running that.
But it does revolve around a fear of some sort of entity in the closet that does seem to go after children.
Yep.
Beyond that, the Stephen King story ties are very loose. You do briefly glimpse this thing, and it, to me, it looks like, I keep forgetting the word, like people have the night
the
terrors.
Sleep paralysis.
It looks like a sleep paralysis demon. It's like a shadow man.
Yeah.
And it's very creepy.
I've heard rumors, and this is one of those rumors that people, I'm sure, put out there to make it seem like you have to see this movie.
Shadow Men are real and
well,
kill
Shadow
you
Men
if you
are
don't
real.
Watch the movie.
Well, yeah, of course that's known. No, but that one of the moments in there was so scary that they had to change it because, it like, in test audience, it like completely freaked people out to like make them walk out.
I mean, I have seen a fair number of horror movies playing around with the different ways you can scare people in like the last 10-15 years. And I think, like, some of that took inspiration from the sort of iconic scene in The Ring with the girl in the closet.
Yeah, it's a good opening.
Right. Well, not the opening scene itself, but the later callback to it at the memorial.
Oh, yeah.
That's like a shock scare.
Yep.
And also when you expect there to be a jump scare and then it's not, and then your nerves are on edge.
Yeah. Yep.
They've been trying out different things with that.
We're
like, how long can you extend it? Oh, what if nothing happens at all?
We're looking at you, James Wan.
Yeah, James Wan likes to play around with that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they did something with that, and audiences' nerves were just frayed when something happens. But yeah, it's a pretty good trailer. I think I want to see what the reviews say on it, though.
Yeah, but it's a really good trailer.
Literally the opening 5 minutes that do show the therapy session with the sisters is
like
very scary. Yeah. It had me. I wasn't really wanting to watch this trailer because the first ones hadn't really impressed me. But then I watched that, and then I had to watch the rest of the trailer.
Yeah. Okay, switching from scary mode, we saw the trailer for Crater. This is a Disney Plus movie.
Crater like a moon crater.
Yes.
So this is set in the future. I think it's like 2269. Yeah,
like that.
But basically,
there's clearly a moon colony.
Yep.
Yep.
And sort of a road trip on the moon, which is kind of an idea, a fun idea.
It's a bunch of teenagers who steal a moon rover.
Yeah, and
from
go to
moon colony
because one of their fathers says you have to go to this crater, and there's some mystery. It's from the producers of Stranger Things.
Yep.
Well,
you know, I feel like there's only one real mystery you can ever do with something like that, and that's that there's some kind of alien artifact or alien hieroglyphics or something like that. I'm like, what do you have there that's not some alien shit?
But, I mean, I think we were joking. It's kind of like space camp or explorers or,
a little bit of wish fulfillment in there. It looks like they're, you know, it's kind of a little bit misfit type kids. And it looks like they kind of bond while they're off doing this. Special effects obviously look good.
Yeah.
There's a pretty, like, they're doing stuff. It's, like, realistic in the sense that they're doing things that you could at least do on the moon. But it's like they're playing like baseball, that doing that. But it's like with the low gravity, it's like you can literally knock a ball into orbit and stuff like that. And they're also being wistful looking, like, oh, that's right, because most of them grew up on the moon,
right?
And only the lead character maybe has come from Earth.
And there's a little bit of like, oh, she's an Earther,
right? But there's also like they're looking up at Earth like it's the moon to them,
exactly.
And they're like, well, what does one of them ask? Like, is there really water there? Is there really trees everywhere there? Like, they just don't even know. And
that's a cool idea.
Yeah. By the way, one of my favorite sort of recent sci-fi movies, kind of a little indie movie, is the movie Moon.
Yeah.
With Sam Rockwell in it. That's a really good movie. And this looks considerably more fun than that one does in a different way. I like that movie, but this is a different vibe. But I think I like the sci-fi stuff. You know, I like the new Lost in Space show and stuff too. Yeah. Also more serious than this.
I'm sure there's going to be some survival sci-fi stuff in here, too.
How many kids do you think are going to die?
At least three.
I mean,
plus the dog,
just a horrific asphyxiation yes. death.
They're Disney like, Plus loves murdering children.
Like one will be like, "Oh, if you cross over into the sunlight side of the moon, the temperature skyrockets 248 degrees.
You'll immediately disintegrate.
Just gonna get
burst of flame.
Yeah, probably gonna happen.
Yeah,
this is what happens when we watch a bunch of horror trailers right before a Disney Plus trailer. no, but it looks pretty good. I think I want to try it out. Is it a movie?
Yes, it is a movie. I think it's hitting soon, if I'm not mistaken. It's like the first week of May or something.
I didn't pay attention to when it was coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. And then we got a couple teasers. We got a teaser for the Penguin. This is just like an in-production. There's even some shots of him like that's like they're showing the behind the scenes. But the most interesting thing about the Penguin to me is that it's basically, it seems like Colin Farrell is doing a Robert De Niro impression as he tries to take over the city's crime.
And most interesting for me is its existence, because I don't know I don't know why you make the show.
It is a little odd.
A crime story in the wake of, like, Falcone being killed is a big part of the Batman movie. Spoilers for the Batman movie from 2 years ago, or a year ago, whenever it was.
I think everybody saw it. It did very well. Yeah. Literally everybody who's listening to this saw it.
Everyone.
I guarantee you.
Yeah, if you didn't
message us.
Yeah, message
and then on the way home, they blasted Nirvana.
but the whole thing was the Falcones like got wiped out, and so the notion of there being a power vacuum and that's a good crime story.
It is,
and he was a solid enough penguin, crime boss in there.
But he was in it for 5 minutes.
He was in it long enough to have like they went back to him a few times,
did they?
Yeah. Yeah,
and
they
then
did.
There was a chase scene.
I just remember the chase scene,
and it was like one of those things where it's like it's one of the most memorable scenes in the movie. But I'm also like, Batman just drove around for like 20 minutes just to make the Penguin's car not go off the road. I'm like, that's kind of goofy.
Can't you just hit it?
I mean, I feel like Christopher Nolan's Batman would have like run over him with a tank in about minute one.
Yep.
Solved.
Yep. Got him. Yep. But this looks like it's made with all the seriousness and sort of the recent movie.
And apparently, it's set a week after the end of the Batman.
Right. I couldn't see this that super well because sometimes when we watch these trailers, there's a glare on Randy's laptop. Randy, why don't you do something about the sun?
I do not control the sun.
We'll work on that.
I've told you that if I controlled the sun, it would be 90 degrees outside all the time.
but what I mean is I didn't actually see the flooded Gotham or partially flooded Gotham, but I think that's a neat bit of continuity to show the aftermath of it. If indeed that happened, I don't know. Y'all could have been lying.
No. It was there, and it is true.
How flooded is it? Are people like moving around in like boats and shit?
I don't know. It didn't.
You said flooded.
I mean, we saw like part of the city flooded at the very beginning of it.
Okay.
I didn't see any boats or people going.
If it's not like the Christian Slater movie with the heist during the big rainstorm with
hard
boats.
Hard rain.
Hard rain. Yeah.
I actually liked hard rain.
You know, a few weeks ago, I put it on while I was cooking something, and I put it on in the background, and I was like, I kind of want to watch the whole thing.
Early 2000s dumb action movies are great to have on while you're cooking.
It's true.
Let me ask you this. I haven't seen a lot of these, but I believe I'm going to draw a comparison. Early 2000s action movies equals modern day Gerard Butler action movies?
Oh yeah, 100%.
So here's the question. Who's going to watch The Penguin here? Is anybody going to try out the first episode?
Let's see a show of hands. It's a podcast.
You know, we were the ones who were, none of us were as into the Batman as the rest of the world was.
I found it kind of bland and bad.
Although I like it better than most of the Nolan movies.
And I guess I'm somewhere maybe between y'all. I didn't particularly like it, but I liked parts of it. Catwoman was good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought his portrayal of Bruce was
so. I liked Batman being in you know, walking around. We talked about it. You can go back and listen to our Batman review.
Yeah, you go listen to it.
That opener,
it's good stuff. Really,
yeah, it's really good.
Peak podcasting, right up there with the Terrence Stamps.
That opener where he's scaring graffiti artists. That's
Batman's
good.
He's hitting up the street crime that heart hurts us.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks a lot, Batman.
A lot less graffiti in Gotham City when the floods hit.
Yeah, he couldn't stop the giant flood.
No, but he did stop some graffiti from
really
happening.
Scared that
he
guy.
He couldn't even stop the flood because he found that workman's tool Riddler left.
Look, murders, yes. Murders, yes. Theft, yes, absolutely. Organized crime all over the place. Giant floods that killed a lot of people, yes. Graffiti? Not in my town, pal.
That's right. You're either putting a bat, putting up a bat spray paint, or you're putting up nothing.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of people don't know this, but what happened was that Joe Chill spray painted his mom and dad before he shot them. So that's actually the thing that's he's most offended by, his spray paint. I liked the movie, but that is ridiculous.
It was. So do you ever spray paint the devil by the Pale Moonlight?
All mine.
Yeah, I will probably watch this unless I've given up on HBO Max by then, because HBO Max is currently pitching like 5 different shows that all sound horrific to me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I may be done with HBO Max. It's just Max.
Better than the 5 spinoffs of Billions that Showtime is wanting to do.
That's fair. Well, better than the return of Chuck Lorre and
Charlie
Sheen that they're pitching. Better than the spinoff of Big Bang Theory. Better than Rick and Morty anime. Better than the Harry Potter show they're doing. Like, I literally don't want to watch any of
that
these
shows. That can go straight to hell. The others are kind of like insignificant. I'm not going to pay attention to.
They're all offensive to me.
People love Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory at least is an actively anti-trans, and therefore I hate it less.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I've never seen an episode, but
I watched the first season. It was fine.
Anyway, I probably will watch the Penguin.
We'll consider you, Penguin.
Before I go, Colin Farrell is the reason if I would probably press play.
His performance is great.
What we have seen in the last few years is a lot of people who were primarily movie actors going to TV because everybody knows where that's where a lot of the best drama is. And it does allow you to kind of stretch a bit. You don't have to do the short, punchy movie stuff. Your character, whatever you're going to be portraying, can breathe a little bit.
But if this is Sopranos, but in Gotham, I'm not... It's kind of like, ugh.
See, that is my interest. Sopranos and Gotham, I'd watch that. Especially if Colin Farrell's fronting it. Colin Farrell and The Gentlemen won me over for a long time. Like, I'll watch the next 5
Here's the weirdest thing for me. And this was even an issue sometimes in the Gotham Central comic, which was otherwise a pretty good version of this kind of thing.
Yep.
Which is like, I need the universe to be a little bit heightened. I need it to be like Mr. Freeze, Joker, Clayface, those guys. That's the crime family should have to deal with that kind of stuff on the regular.
Yeah.
There's really nothing quite that wild in the Batman. Penguin is really just kind of a normal mobster. Mm-hmm. He's got a little bit of a funny look.
There were no wonk wonk.
He didn't wonk wonk. He didn't have a penguin with a rocket strap to its back.
If he didn't have an army of underground rockets, what are we even doing?
At no point was he in a giant rubber ducky.
Did he even have an umbrella? I don't think he even had an umbrella.
No, he didn't have an umbrella.
No. What the fuck?
He's a tough guy penguin. He's like based on the Arkham game kind of penguin.
Even the Arkham game, he had an umbrella that was a machine gun.
Yeah, he had machine gun umbrellas.
True.
Yeah. No machine gun umbrellas, no sail.
Well, this guy, though, can nearly outwit the Batmobile after 20 minutes of driving. They did wreck the whole city and burned it to the ground.
I mean, is it possible?
And then he had to start a flood just to put the fires out.
Is it possible that just Batman doesn't know how to drive the Batmobile?
But here's the thing, guys. Yes. Vehicular homicide, lots of accidents, fire. No graffiti.
You know how there's like a lot of kind of like Gen Z, and I'm not making this a culture war, but a lot of Gen Z aren't that into driving. They can get a lot of the stuff they like
my kids want to drive.
Immediately and then through the internet and on their phones and stuff like that. Batman is Gen Z in that.
It's true. You think he didn't even know how to drive?
He doesn't know how to drive.
It's like, Alfred, why do I have to have a Batmobile? Can't I have like a Bat Metro Pass? No, sir.
I think I've discovered the secret of that scene.
Yeah. Anyway,
Penguin's old school. He's like, I know how to drive.
Anyway, that really thoroughly ruined the Batman for everyone.
Yeah, I apologize for that. Especially
I make no apologies. To
any Zoomers out there, y'all are our future. Please keep voting.
Let's talk about the other teaser.
Okay.
Which is for Dave. Dave's going to be super into this because it's about assassins.
Uh-huh.
And that's The Continental.
You know what?
Peacock.
This is a good enough teaser trailer, and it used Donna Summer's I Feel Love, think, which has a wicked beat from Giorgio Moroder.
Yeah.
Look at you dropping some music knowledge.
He's like one of those founders of like electronica music.
This is set in the 70s. It's the creation of the Continental
Hotel from the John Wick movie.
Yeah.
It's a 3-part story. Most of this teaser is like really short. All we see is a bunch of assassins, all of which have gimmicks, because that's John Wick's thing.
Yep.
I am a mild fan of the John Wick franchise. I haven't seen 4 yet.
I haven't either, but I've heard the 4th one is better than the 3rd one. So
I've heard too.
I'm looking forward to it.
I have seen and remember a little bit of the first one. I've seen the first 3 and remember a little bit of the first one.
And I think they progressively
watch these movies.
They progressively have gotten kind of
They look to me like they're pretty good at what they do. But it's just not my thing.
Yeah. I'm just sad that I don't think Lance Reddick did anything for this one.
Probably not. Well, it was the 70s. He wouldn't be in there.
I mean, we know the main guy is in there. Lance Reddick is about the same age.
But Lance Reddick should be maybe a younger actor playing him.
I hope so. But
sometimes they do the CG thing, Randy.
That's true.
Is Mel Gibson going to be in this, apparently?
That's what I've heard.
I don't think that guy apologized enough for his stuff.
No, he did not. I believe his apology was, "I was drunk." That's
Yeah.
This is not an apology.
Nope. Anyway, so that's a bit of a damper on things. He wasn't in the trailer, we don't quite know all the details, but
I am less excited for this one than the ballerina, which is Ana de Armas' version of John Wick, which
is that actually in the Wikiverse?
Yes.
The Wikiverse?
Wikiverse.
Wikiverse.
Wild.
Yep.
We do have one more trailer to talk about.
We do. Do we? Do we?
And it was one of the best trailers.
Arguably, I think the best one.
We should talk about the Muppets.
Oh, I missed one on the list.
Yeah. What's it actually called?
Muppets Mayhem.
Yes. Muppets Mayhem. So, it's actually, I was thinking, I had watched the trailer once and I was like, wait, am I remembering right? Was it a mockumentary style? And it's not. But no. It is the story of the band. Dr. You know what? There's interview snippets, so it suggests it. When it starts out, it shows like some real rockers and stuff like that, and they're talking about the influence the Electric Mayhem had on it. Dr. Teeth, everybody knows Electric who that Mayhem. Is. Dr. Teeth, who's the Valley Girl chick,
Janice.
Yep, and Animal and all the rest. And they're telling anecdotes, and it's the classic Muppets thing where you talk the Muppets when you're around the Muppets, they're real.
Yeah.
And 100%. And it's funny to hear him talking about the influence, how they were at a party with him and they like tattooed Electric Mayhem on him and stuff like that while he was like one of these dudes while he was asleep. I don't know who that was.
I'm bad with music people.
He's
so.
Some guy, yeah, some guy.
Anyway, and
we'll say who it is.
Revealed in there is that amidst all their partying and stuff, they've never put out an album.
Yep.
And so this is the story of, I guess, a producer trying to cut their first album with them. There's lots of guest stars from pop and rock people.
I saw Paul Abdul.
Was that Lizzo?
I believe Lizzo was there, yes.
Weird Al.
Weird Al does make an appearance. This just looked so much fun.
It's a great trailer. It's very funny. That classic Muppet sort of interaction with kind of celebrities and stuff when it's, I think, at its best. And, Randy, you and I know at least are like, I think you'd say, oh, yeah, I like the Muppets.
Yeah.
But I don't watch all the Muppet
things.
I'm
not a huge fan.
Nick, where do you stand on Muppets?
I love the Muppets. I have not watched everything, but the first few movies were pretty big.
If you had to, could you kill a Muppet?
No. Okay. I mean, are you saying if it was an evil Muppet?
Yeah.
I could kill an evil Muppet.
What if you were on a desert island and you needed stuffing to fill your raft?
I don't know.
Muppet Survivor.
What's the big monster? Sweetums?
Sweetums.
Yeah, would you kill Sweetums to stuff your raft with his stuffing?
No, I would just talk to Sweetums all the time. But
it'd be like Tales from the Black Freighter from The Watchmen, but with Muppets.
I don't know why we thought today's podcast would be really weird.
We're just trying to stay awake, y'all.
I love the fact that the main Muppets aren't in this. That this is literally just the band. Mayhem.
This is the show I wanted to see.
This is Spinal Tap by way of Muppets.
It's got a little bit of extra energy, a little bit of outlaw energy.
And
that's
animals,
kind of fun.
Finding of an electric drum set.
Amazing timing on it. That's super good.
I am a casual Muppets fan at best, and this looks super fun.
Right. What I needed to see was a trailer that showed that they really had some good comic timing and funny scenes, and I got that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 100%.
All right. Let's talk about new stuff that is not trailers. Yep. They announced today that Michelle Yeoh's Section 31 TV show is not going forward, but they're doing a TV movie.
And just to clarify, Star Trek Section 31. Right. For people who have been watching, say, Star Trek Discovery, or who watched Deep Space Nine back in the day. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say too much about this because you haven't quite gotten there in your Deep Space Nine watch, Randy,
and
or
I
Nick.
Certainly haven't gotten there yet.
But that is the show where it originates. And although it's treated a bit differently then, and I think better than it was on Discovery, it has always been something of like a sort of Black Ops CIA, should the Federation be, or Starfleet be dealing with this, Sometimes, depending on how they portray it, sometimes they know more about it, sometimes they know less. But Michelle Yeoh joined, who was the evil in Star Trek Discovery,
evil emperor.
Is from the Mirror Universe.
Yep. She actually was the emperor at the center of the Mirror Universe, the one of the worst people in the world.
Right. But kind of did some redeeming stuff, and over the course of the series, when she moved over to our prime universe of Star Trek, she had a sort of a maternal feel for Captain Burnham, who eventually became Captain Burnham,
yep.
Michelle Burnham,
yep.
or Michael Burnham, and seemed to be on something of a path of redemption, while also being the snarkiest
yes.
character on the show, and the most physical badass.
I loved that character. I was sad to see her go, and I was like, the only that tempted it for me was like, oh, well, she's going to have her Section 31 spinoff, and then that didn't happen. But then she got an Oscar.
Then she got an Oscar, but actually, so in the Trek community, we thought that just priced her out of Trek. We yep. cannot pay whatever paycheck she's going to get after she's got an Oscar.
She loves Trek.
But apparently, and she was always a very vocal supporter. She always seemed like she was having the best of time. Mm-hmm. She actually seemed like a great person all around.
Yep.
Like, I follow her on Facebook after Everything Everywhere All at Once, and, like, I always see her posting, like, the sweetest stuff with Jamie Lee Curtis. But not just that, like, just with her family. She's like, here we are at Christmas opening presents. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're great.
I honestly think she's just a lover of genre stuff. Because, I mean, she just done Star Trek. Yeah. She did Witcher. She's been in everything.
I think she wanted to start stretching more some dramatic wings, which she had more of a chance to, and I guess Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah.
But also, Everything Everywhere All at Once was the big shot.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one. But, yeah, apparently that love for Star Trek remains, and although they're not going to get it at Section 31 as a series, it's going to be a movie. And I will be curious to see how they handle it, because I am one of those, I don't love the idea that even in their fairly utopian future, it's always shown to have some issues, right. but fairly utopian, that I don't like Starfleet having a Black Ops thing. But... I think the producers have indicated in stuff I've seen about it that they know damn well that they should be kind of the villains.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story I could see told.
Is it possible that Michelle Yeoh will bring down Section 31?
I'm hoping for it. I'm hoping she's going to like be like, oh, she's like our best operative. She knows, like, she's from the Mirror Universe. She knows how to be conniving. And then she's going to be like, oh, yeah, but I also learned how to be a better person. And unfortunately, I see what you guys are doing is not good.
I just have to ask a question. Will David Lynch show up in this movie? Didn't he play
Lynch, but future.
He was in the future?
Cronenberg.
Oh, was it Cronenberg?
Cronenberg is in the future. And yes, so this is in the past.
Okay.
Actually, she traveled to the past through the Guardian of Forever near the end of Discovery.
Right. Yes.
But I don't know. I forget where she was going.
Oh, I don't know.
I didn't even know if we 100% knew where it was, but I thought it was the past, indeed.
That was back to the past.
We shall see.
I don't know. Maybe she found Section 31, and who knows?
Weird time travel where she actually is the founder of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
She was supposed to. It was supposed to have been around before its appearance on Deep Space Nine.
I mean,
that was just when it intersected.
That would definitely make sense for an evil organization to be founded by an evil emperor of a mirror universe.
Yeah, if she's like, oh, we need to have somebody who can. You need me on that fence. That is what the idea of it embodies. It's all the few good men debate stuff. But that's pretty big. Like the fact that Star Trek basically landed her first role post Everything Everywhere All at Once. Pretty big.
We got two bits of news from Max.
Uh-huh.
Not our mascot Max Larch, but HBO Max, which is just called Max in the most stupid generic rebranding I've ever heard.
Almost as bad as Paramount Plus with Showtime.
That's pretty bad too. At least that describes something. They took off description from HBO Max.
That's true.
They took one of the most well branded TV networks ever.
And they're like, what if it just sounded like it was a plumber?
Yeah. So they're developing a Conjuring TV show.
Which, right?
I'm not sure if that's a good idea. I really like The Conjuring, but the last one was supposedly not very good.
It was not.
And also, a lot of the spinoffs are not very good.
Correct.
So I'm not sure that they should do a TV show.
I'm going to be say that this is a good
idea. You're going to be the yay-sayer.
I'm going to be the yay-sayer. I think this is a good idea. I think this could be a fun idea that kind of forms like a... Whether you're... How you feel about the Warrens and kind of like... Were they charlatans?
They're charlatans.
And
well, here's the question is like... I think I've read it. They were. I think they might have believed what they were doing.
Yes.
I think they might have talked themselves into doing things that were like essentially probably money making, but I think they did believe what they were doing.
Yeah.
Regardless of that,
but the fictional versions of them are well intentioned.
Yes, the fictional versions of them are well intentioned. Brilliantly played by Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga. They're great at these characters.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And because they did, you know, they were kind of famously, they investigated the Amityville house. They investigated the Annabelle doll. They have ties to several famous cases. And so I'm sure there's like a zillion other ones from like the books they've written that are like they could spin episodes out of a lot of that stuff.
Well, and then all the stuff that they did in that last Conjuring, or not the last, but the one prior to the last one that had just the
Annabelle Comes Home.
The one that had all the different ghosts in their room of
famously
horrors.
They have a sort of a trophy room that's off limits where they have like dangerous magical objects and stuff like that. And whatever, Annabelle Comes Home, I thought the previous two Annabelle movies kind of crap, but Annabelle Comes Home I liked.
That was
another teen horror one, but because basically it's like their kid is home alone with the friends spending the night or whatever. And they're like, "Hey, let's go look in the room of trophies." Of course.
Sure.
And scary things happen, but it's, it's good teen horror.
I think there's a lot of good stuff to kind of pick from and create kind of a larger mythology, maybe not like an X-Files type kind of monster of the week thing, but you could definitely do something with it that I think would be a lot, really cool.
Maybe so.
I kind of, you know, one of the sort of fun things they do at the end of every Conjuring movie usually is they show some photographs taken of the actual sort of case stuff, which I believe all BS. But it's fun to like, oh, you just watched the fictionalized version of it, and here's some photos, and you're like, oh, there was at least something like that sort of occurred in the real world, or was faked, or whatever.
Right.
But it is kind of fun. But I kind of don't like, I just hope the show doesn't feel like it's promoting, goofy ghost hunter
from
shit.
What I understand, James Wan is involved.
Yes.
That guy signed off on anything.
Yes.
Well,
signed off on the other Conjuring movies. He produced various spinoffs of that.
But I feel like he is our best modern day horror.
He's maybe
teller.
The best mainstream kind of guy, yeah.
So I'm curious about this one.
I'll consider it.
The thing I'm curious about, I'm kind of excited about, honestly, given that I didn't really get into House of the Dragon, is that they have finally greenlit the prequel that I think we all wanted to see.
Because
we read the graphic novels.
Yep.
Hedge Knight. Now, it is called A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Hedge Knight, which I'm like, that's too long of a title. And you guys, just because you took HBO off your name, you don't have to add more books. You can just call it The Hedge Knight.
Are they afraid of Hedge Knight because they just make think that the people are going to take it very literally and be like, is this like a guy who's just always rumbling around in the bushes?
Maybe so. I mean, why not just call it Game of Thrones, The Hedge Knight? Like,
well, is that what they call Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon? Or do they just call it House of the Dragon?
Okay. Yeah, that's a cool sounding name. Yeah. Like Dave says, Hedge Knight sounds like it might be about a guy who makes hedges.
Let's just be
careful. Like the Lawnmower Man.
But what it's in fact about is there were a trio of novellas, which are also adapted into a trio of graphic novels, which I think, unfortunately, sadly, are all out of print. I think we might have the third one. About Dunk, the future Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, Sir Duncan the Tall.
Yep.
And Egg, the future king, Aegon Targaryen,
yep.
as they wander Westeros having adventures roughly 100 years before the events of the novels.
The first book of the first thing of this, I remember really liking it back when.
And it's The Knight's Tale.
It is the story of A Knight's Tale. Sir Duncan is just like Duncan the Squire at the time. The knight he serves is an old man who gets pneumonia and dies.
Yep.
Only, you know, in Knight's Tale where he goes and he gets involved, and he is in over his head in A Knight's Tale, but it's a lot of fun and adventure and singing. all right, we now imagine it's Game of Thrones instead, and at the tournament it's all, oh, you've crossed this family, oh, you've insulted this house, oh, they're going to torture this person. It's like so Game of Thrones, but it's super good.
It's really good.
And it leads to a great, finale.
Yeah.
So his character is really interesting, and he is kind of the future King Aegon? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Is like, you know, like a princeling right now, mm-hmm. is kind of undercover, essentially. Has his head shaved, like, sort of more like a monk or mm-hmm. something like that, yep. or like maybe like a squire is in yep. Game of Thrones times. And so he essentially, Sir Duncan has this kid serving him who's actually above his station by all the highest degrees possible.
Yes. Yes.
But who kind of has to listen to him and still sort of do what he says. And they are a great duo.
Mm-hmm.
So this should be... This should be a home run.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. This is the only thing Max is doing that sounds good. There is a Galaxy Quest show in development at Paramount Plus. I think we're wary of it, but we were discussing earlier, and there's definitely ways they could do it and make it cool.
Oh, we spitballed some ideas, and we came up with the one that they should do and pay us for.
Yeah, they should call us up and pay us for it. So yes. Paramount Plus, if you're listening, I know you are, we have ideas.
I don't want to say what they are, just know that they're real good.
You show us the money, and we'll tell you what they are.
And make it fast.
Make it fast. Or else we'll take our ideas over to Max.
We'll let them do they'll do a relaunch of the Orville, and they're going to get all our good stuff.
Get all our good ideas. Anyway, Mia Goth has joined the Marvel's Blade.
Yep.
This is good news in that Mia Goth is great in what I've seen her in.
Yeah, she's just...
Even though I wasn't a big fan of
Pearl and
X.
Pearl.
X is the one I saw. She's great in it.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm curious, I don't know what role she'll play.
I have an inkling.
Yeah?
I think she'll play Lilith.
Interesting.
They said, like, I got the impression, because especially because it's late casting, that it's a supporting player role and not like a...
Not the big bad.
Not the big bad, maybe.
Yeah.
I wonder if she'd play like Satana, if they bring Satana in.
I mean, I could see that as well.
Or she might be just playing the Tracy Lords part and they're weirdly going to do that opening.
Weird. I don't think you get Mia Goth to play a random person.
But
I think
Satana would be a big one.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah, I don't know.
She could be like, being set up for future use, like, I'm going to be the major bad guy in the next one, or I'm going to play a major role in the next
Maybe
one.
Maybe she's playing Blorco.
Oh, Blorco.
Blorco. People know the Blorco gag, right?
They have. People should look up Blorco, but it's a meme that's making fun of sort of the Marvel... those end credit sequences where longtime fans know what the deal is, other people don't. Blorco is their generic name for that character.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Where fans are like, oh my god, it's Blorco!
Yep.
And casual people are like, what?
Yep.
Blorco.
Yep. Blorco. And last bit of news, we got the voice cast for the Creature Commandos, the animated thing that's part of the James Gunn
The DCU. Big DC yep. relaunch movies thing.
It's a pretty great cast, so... Frank Grillo is Rick Flag. David Harbour is Eric Frankenstein. Indira Varma, who I don't know, is the bride. Maria Bakalova, also don't know, is Princess Ileana Rostovic. Zoe Chow is Nina Mazursky. I don't know who Nina Mazursky is, but Zoe Chow was killing it on Party Down and The After Party.
Yep.
And Alan Tudyk as Dr. Phosphorus. Sean Gunn will voice both Weasel and G.I. Robot.
Sure.
And Steve Agee is reprising his role as John Economos. So...
There is an existing Creature Commandos thing that they did as an animated thing.
Did they?
Yep.
Oh.
I saw it. Fathery, who does the Star Trek podcast with me, showed it to me like over Halloween. It had like, what was it like? There was like a specter. It was like, it must have been a trio of horror movies or something. And now I'm trying to think. No, it wasn't all. I don't even remember what all the theme was, because like one of them was like, I feel like a Green Lantern story. I think they did all have like a sort of a horror vibe, though, to them. One of them was a Creature Commando story. And I'm trying to think. It was like Sergeant Rock was working with the Creature Commandos, like, on a... And this is just like, they were all vignettes, so it was like 15 minutes long.
Huh.
Done, get in, get out. A little bit of that slightly edgier DC, so, you know, you can show some zombies getting shot at by machine guns and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was actually really pretty good. I feel like they've already done one good Creature Commandos animated thing. This is, I guess, going to be the showpiece one, though.
Hmm. All right, I think that's our news. We're going to take a break and then talk about some TV and some movies and some games. And,
A poster.
A poster. All right, so we got a bit of a cornucopia of different things to talk about here.
Yeah.
We've got Cocaine Bears. We've got
Deep Space Nine.
We've got space stations. Space stations. We got brain eating space aliens. We got Cthulhoid fish.
Yes.
We got gem merchants, and we got boxers.
Boxers. Yes. All right. Let's knock them out.
Let's knock it out.
We'll go out super energetic.
So Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Dave, you do a Trek podcast,
right?
And yet, until recently, you had never seen all of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I don't know if I've ever fully conveyed this when I've talked about the podcast, but among our group of, we have a semi-regular group of sort of four people who contribute right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the casual.
Yes.
like I've seen less Star Trek than some of them. I had never seen all of Deep Space Nine, over the course of, since we launched Tex Trek, over that course of that span of time, we would cover it whenever there were breaks between other series, and we'd cover like 8 episodes at a time and all of that. And I watched it and I loved it. And it's fantastic. You have already been watching it a bit, Randy.
You had convinced me that I need to watch it. And so now I am midway or almost done with season 5, which means I got 2 full seasons afterward. Right. And between the two of us, we convinced Nick that he should watch it.
It's true.
You did. So you're in the test phase.
Nick has watched the first 10 episodes of season 1, which I
have.
Both you and I, Dave, would say is the season 1 is the weakest of the seasons.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I mean, not that it's bad. It is just the weakest of the seasons.
Right. Finding its footing a little bit. Sometimes a little more like classic Trek with sort of like done in one episodes.
Yeah.
But pretty good at them. So Nick, first impressions.
Okay, so I liked but didn't love the opening
the premiere?
2 episodes, which is the premiere. I think it was trying to do a lot, and
it's a little high concept.
It is.
In some ways, later on, I think you're aware that there's some wartime stuff that happens in it.
And then they link in the whole backstory of Sisko and, like, his wife being killed by Picard, and it's like...
Okay, well, Picard didn't literally kill her. She was killed at the Battle of Wolf 359.
Which he, as Locutus... was instigated that.
He didn't ask to be Locutus.
That's right.
He did not.
He was taken against his will.
But Sisko...
The whole point of the current season of Picard, Nick.
But Sisko doesn't...
No, yes.
Doesn't
obviously, it's an emotional thing. And
but I thought that was an interesting way to wrap up that initial first 2 episodes. Him
right.
sort of coming to terms with that.
Right. He lost his wife in it, and there's an interesting thing where the prophets, the wormhole aliens,
mm-hmm.
sometimes called the prophets by the Bajorans, who see them as
yeah.
religious figures, as like their gods, that they are like, oh yeah, we live outside of time, and you, Sisko, who have not been able to get past the death of your wife, are also living outside of time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's a very Star Trek kind of high concept thing. And it is a little, in some ways it's not that indicative of what the show is, which
right.
is a little bit more human and down to earth. Although that, getting over the death of a loved one is like a pretty down to earth
yeah.
thing in a lot of ways.
But I will say, after those initial first 2 episodes, they start delving into the different characters and
yep.
some of their backstories and why they're there. And I love the idea of a Federation-run space station that they don't have complete control of.
Right.
It is...
They're in a tenuous area.
Yeah.
At best.
Yes.
And I think that sort of really was the thing that captured me, because I was like, okay, is this just going to be a Federation run, and it's going to be, like, by-the-book kind of thing? And it's
yeah,
like...
Very much frontier space.
Yeah, it's very frontier space. They're basically having to deal with, is it Cardassian technology?
Yes. The station is Cardassian. It was essentially a mining camp.
Yep.
So, Colmini... is trying to sort
O'Brien.
Of, O'Brien is learning all the new kind of technology and trying
yep.
to figure out things.
He's usually cranky about that stuff.
He is
yep.
cranky, but he's very good. They're dealing with Odo, which is their head of security, but they call him Constable. He hates
right.
being called Constable, which I love.
Everything on there has like a frontier vibe, even the fact that the sort of the deck thing area is called like the Promenade.
Promenade, yeah. That Quark
and their ships, by the way, they're are kind of... big shuttles are called, runabouts.
Yep. The runabouts are a great ship.
Yeah.
They are.
So, I think the show is getting better as I move along, because
mm-hmm.
there are definitely episodes that I think are great.
Also, all the characters will develop further as you go along.
Well, the one where they basically get to delve into Odo by way of framing him for a murder,
mm-hmm.
I thought was exceptionally well done.
And you also, speaking of murders, you had mentioned earlier the episode where Dax is on trial,
yep.
mm-hmm. and there's a question of the culpability of her past lives and how much influence they have over her present, the symbiote within her.
As a lot of, Trek is great aliens.
Yeah.
But I feel like the Trill are some of the more interesting ones because of the ideas mm-hmm. behind them and, like...
Well, you know...
The symbiote just passes through different bodies, and mm-hmm. but all the memories are stored, so you have knowledge of basically everything, so...
And you may have had a past with different genders, yep. Different ages that you dealt with, of course.
That Sisko calls her old man as yep. kind of a term of endearment, kind of.
Because he's known Curzon Dax for a long time. And as you go on, Nick, they will tell more and more stories about Curzon, and Curzon Dax sounds like fun. Like,
yeah.
if they were to do a prequel series and show me Curzon Dax,
right? I'd be all about he that. Is the guy with who made stories.
I even hit upon the episode that I guess most people think is dumb.
And a somewhat infamously goofy episode in which they are sort of trapped inside of a chess game, an alien chess game of sorts, and have to go through. It's also like an escape room.
See,
like a ridiculous escape
room. It was a ridiculous escape room, but I loved the idea behind it.
Yeah.
Because First Contact is supposed to be such an enormous thing for Star Trek.
Yeah.
And this is their first contact with this. And the thing they immediately want to do is give us quirks.
They gamble at quirks.
We hear there are games there.
Yeah.
And apparently these guys love games. And Quark screws everything up by cheating, and then they decide to introduce a different kind of game.
And then it looks like lives are in the
and
balance.
It looks like four of the head people, so it was Dax,
Sisko,
Bashir, and... Oh God.
It's not O'Brien, is it?
No, it's the...
Kira?
Yeah, it's Kira.
Yeah.
Are kind of shunted into this alternate dimension kind of game board, and have to sort of solve a problem.
And I hate this episode more than any other episode of Deep Space Nine.
Why do you hate this episode?
Because it's just dumb.
But I mean, like, Randy. it's like an episode of the X-Men with Arcade.
No, Arcade is cool. This is dumb.
Oh, I liked these aliens. These aliens who, like, beat on little sticks and have fun.
Yeah.
And drink really bad alcohol.
At some point, we were talking about, like, shows like... I don't really like too many cartoons like Steven Universe and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, I can see them and see why people like them. I can see scenes I like in them. But I think I determined that my tolerance for whimsy is not super high.
Yeah.
And it props up in certain places. But I think Randy is also that person, only his particular tolerances are lower.
Yeah,
even lower.
Yep.
I was deeply amused by this episode, especially like subplots of dealing with Sisko talking about sex with Jake, his son. Talking about the concept of sex.
I forgot that came up in that episode.
By the way,
because he's hanging out with Quark's... Is it his son?
It's Quark's nephew.
Nog.
Yeah, Nog. I can't remember. You've probably seen his brother, Rom.
Yes.
Who
yes.
he kind of exploits.
Yep.
Yes, 100%.
Those characters all end up having interesting arcs.
Nog, Rom, and Jake all become really interesting characters. And they were not...
I didn't have any particular high hopes for him.
I basically made fun of every item of clothing Jake was wearing for the first couple of episodes because it's the
stylish.
Most gaudiest pieces mm-hmm. of...
When you compare it to Wesley Crusher,
mm-hmm.
the kid had style.
Yep.
My least favorite character is Bashir, but I've been told he gets better.
Yeah,
Bashir's great. When you see Bashir and O'Brien become sort of... There's a friendship that develops there.
I already have a love of O'Brien from Next Gen.
O'Brien's great. My favorite character is Kira.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite, Nick?
Odo.
Odo's pretty good.
I love that actor.
Odo gets a lot of good stuff.
Hey, do you have a favorite by the time you wrapped?
Kira.
Yeah.
Kira is kind of the embodiment of the... Is it the Rage Against the Machine that do the Anger is a Gift? I think is one of their...
Well, in that game episode, Kira is like... She's not part of Federation. She's just like, why the hell am I here? I'm not even part of your stupid organization. I don't want to be.
She is an interesting combination, you'll see, Nick, of both, like, she can actually be... So she's like, she literally was part of a resistance and killed Cardassians and stuff like that. So she's a rare Trek kind of radical by our perspective, or traditional Trek perspective. She was like a frontline freedom fighter. But she's also very, very religious, And it's, you know, portrayed with seriousness, and that actress will get some scenes that are really stunning, I think.
And that's something I really appreciate about this show, is that it's different ideas bumping heads against each other.
Right.
And it's not one cohesive unit, like a bridge crew dealing with right. problems. Mm-hmm. It's
They're
a
not
bunch
made
of,
to come together. They struggle to come
it's
together.
It's like the mm-hmm. Federation security chief bumping heads against Odo on how properly to keep the peace on the promenade and things like that.
More than once, even though Kira is friends with Odo, there will be some questions because he served as constable during the Cardassian yeah. occupation right. and arguably worked as a collaborator.
Yep.
And so, or functioned as such. And so these are things that'll come up.
I'm really looking forward to getting further in. I know it's going to only get better.
I feel like there's one or two episodes in season one that are pretty spectacular. Randy, you know the one that it has to do with a Cardassian
mm-hmm.
On the station. It's probably one of the last few episodes yep. of it. That one is pretty spectacular. Duet is
yep.
the one.
Yep.
I think you're in for some fun stuff.
I wish these seasons were a little shorter than 26 episodes.
I get that.
I do too when I'm going through, but I actually really like that they were because I love some of the weird places they go to.
Yeah.
You would not, believe me, you would not have gotten that episode if they had to hurry towards a
no.
big villain. You would not have gotten the game episode.
Move along.
Don't give Randy flashbacks.
Anyway, we'll talk more about Deep Space Nine.
Let's come back to it occasionally.
And we also, at some point, we're either going to kick Nick out or we're going to make Nick watch Picard, because season 3 of Picard has been amazing.
Yes.
And it ends this week. Now, next week, I'll be out of town, so we will not have a podcast.
Yeah,
but
we're
hoping
Nick will watch a random episode and watch the entire
watch
thing
the entire
in that span.
Yes.
But otherwise, we'll have to kick Nick out and
watch,
talk about it.
Do you want me to watch all of Picard tonight, or do you want me to watch Deep Space Nine?
Nine.
I need to watch all of Picard.
Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine. I like a lot of modern Trek, but Deep Space Nine is better than all of it.
You've actually said that Deep Space Nine is your favorite Trek.
It's vying for it. It's kind of a little hard to call, but it got like the exact balance I like between like standalone episodes. You will start to see that many episodes organically build upon each other, and something that you didn't think was important will suddenly come up like next season, and it won't feel like they forced it in. And I also like their big story arcs, and that's easy to disappoint me on. Randy, you know there's like those surprise 3-episode arcs or 2-parters in some later seasons. I never knew when those were coming, but when they happen, instead of being kind of wearying, like frankly, I always found Doctor Who 2-parters wearying.
Yeah,
I always those were some of their very best Deep Space Nine episodes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think my favorite is probably Strange New Worlds, but I know the Gorn thing takes it out of favorite contention for you.
A little bit. It's only had one season to show its stuff.
Yeah,
and also honestly, like the original series has so much weight for me that it's hard to beat that. And I have a lot of love of TNG, even though it has the highest percentage of bad. Well, no, I take that back. That could go to Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
But it has what you would call a rough start.
Yeah.
As space station shows go, which do you like better, Deep Space Nine or Babylon 5?
It usurps Babylon 5.
See, it's funny because if you had asked me this a year ago, I would have said Babylon 5, no hesitation. Depending on Deep Space Nine lands, I may say it's better than Babylon 5.
Yeah, really?
Babylon 5.
Love Babylon 5.
Yeah, no.
And Babylon 5 does do some things that Trek kind of couldn't. It went to places mm-hmm. that it was not quite. It just wasn't kind of interested in exploring and wouldn't have felt right for Trek.
Mm-hmm.
So B5 is great. People should watch both of them.
Yeah, it's not that DS9 isn't political, but B5
is streaming.
B5 was streaming on it, Max. It's streaming nowhere now.
Oh, that's
so
sad.
Everybody knows last season of B5 is extremely uneven.
Mm-hmm.
It was not JMS's fault. He thought they were only going to get 4 seasons. Then he said they suddenly were like, "What do you want to do with a 5th now that you got it?" And mm-hmm. he's like, "Oh shit."
But you will say Deep Space Nine sticks the landing.
It sticks the landing. I feel like very much so.
Okay.
So.
All right.
What else we got?
So I watched a show called Brain Dead.
Yep.
This is a show that's been on my radar for a while. It's a one season CBS show. Here's what I knew about it. I knew it was about Mary Elizabeth Winstead as the lead.
Okay. That's a good start.
And it is a show about politics, Beltway politics inside Washington. And also, there are aliens eating people's brains.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I remember this a little.
So I was like, that is a weird premise. I don't know quite how the tone of this is going to work. Started watching it, and the first episode has credits, and it's Robert King and Michelle King, a.k.a. the people who do Evil. And Good Fight.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, now that makes sense. And so this feels right in line with their weird shit.
Okay, okay.
I've only watched, like, the first 3 episodes. But it's very fun. It's very... it's not as comedic as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Like, it is very much...
Because that premise feels very rife for comedy.
Yeah, no, it is like about lobbyists, and she... basically, her brother is a senator, and she goes to work for him as, like, his constituent relations person, and she starts to dating this Republican dude who's, like, a chief of staff for mm-hmm. another guy. And they both start to figure out these alien bugs are eating people's brains and turning them into either super lefties or super righties.
Oh, bizarre.
And this wow. is, and this all takes place in 2016 when Trump and Clinton are running.
Oh, man.
So it is interestingly, it's topical for its time.
Is it centrist? Is it, like, we got too polarized?
It's a little bit centrist. But here's the thing.
Because I don't love
Kings,
that.
The Kings are not centrist.
No, they're not.
Okay. So I think this was this may be while they were being radicalized, so it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Starting from that premise is not too crazy.
Yeah.
And I can see where it would give you room to tell stories without being kind of like a fence sitter.
Yeah.
But that's where is this streaming?
It's on Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus. So is this already, this show is well underway?
It's done. It's done. A one season show from, like, it was before Evil got greenlit.
Was it meant to be one season?
No, it got canceled. So I have no idea if there's an ending at
Why'd
all.
Why'd you decide to watch it?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Okay. What's she about to be in? She's about to be in Star Wars.
She's Hera. That's what reminded me. Oh, yeah, I like her, and she's in this thing that I haven't seen
yep.
that I'd heard was good.
Did you know she was married to Ewan McGregor?
I learned that recently.
Yeah.
If I knew it, I'd forgotten it.
That's a Star Wars family.
I know, it's a very Star
Obi-Wan
Wars family.
Obi-Wan and Hera.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's very sweet.
Freddie Prinze Jr. must feel really bad.
Anyway, I don't know if I 100% recommend it, but it's interesting.
Okay.
Y'all weren't going to talk about Creed.
Yeah, and Nick, you have now seen Creed 2. We both want to... Yes. I want to see Creed 2. I want to see Creed 2 so I can see Creed 3. But just as a quick aside, I liked Creed so much when I saw it, that I was like, I will not watch Creed 2 because Ryan Coogler didn't direct it. And I don't want to be disappointed and lose any of my love for it.
I get that.
Yes, this is where the Rocky movies, what they have become.
Right.
Stallone has clearly aged out of the role, but he gets one last movie in Creed.
And he's in Creed 2.
All right, he gets two last movies in Creed and Creed 2.
He does not
Maybe
show
Creed 3, I don't know.
No, he is not in Creed 3. But,
so,
yeah.
Nick, tell me about your experience watching Creed.
I didn't have any interest in this, honestly.
Yep.
I love Ryan Coogler. Black Panther's amazing. Fruitvale Station was very good. This, I just was like, I've seen Rocky. I know of Rocky's tale.
By the way, this is how I feel about almost every Rocky,
yes.
is that I think I don't want to watch it, and then I watch it, and I was like, damn it, how did they pull off this dumb formula again?
Because it doesn't, like, reinvent the wheel. But
they're always so sincere.
But it creates...
And they always have the best training montages of all
100%.
time.
100%. But it creates a new character in
Adonis Creed.
Adonis Creed, which is Carl Weathers'
sort
illegitimate
of,
son?
Yeah, kind of hate to use the term. We don't believe the thing of that.
No,
but he did
but
not...
I'm,
his Felicia, mother did not know that his wife... I'm sorry...
Creed his, had an affair.
He had an affair, and his what's her name? Never knew the
Felicia
wife.
Rashad,
never knew. Yes,
who looks the same as she did in the Cosbys. I swear to God,
it's insane. That was like 30 years ago.
She is amazing. She is such a good
like
role in this.
The opening scene won me over instantly because it shows Adonis Creed, Donnie, as many of his friends
yep.
call him, at like juvenile detention. And you see that
just
he's
beaten up another child.
And they drop, like, some serious language in that.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a PG-13 movie, but they went ahead and dropped their language bomb right there in the opening sequence so that you can see that he is a kid who looks... Like, you can see how mad he is and also how sad he is.
Yes.
He just does not have anyone to kind of guide him. And he suddenly finds out that he's got someone who might...
I don't want to go to another foster home
yeah.
or, you know, one of those other things. And she's like, that's not what this is.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that dynamic.
I think it's actually one of the best openings to a Rocky movie.
Yeah,
or,
100%.
And she takes him in.
And then you sort of flash forward where he is basically always wanted to be a boxer. He's been to school. He's got a good job that he is.
But it's kind of like he's a drone. He's a cubicle drone who's rising through the ranks.
Yeah,
and could go there, but he doesn't like.
He's
care
about to get
a
corner office. But he doesn't care.
Right.
Boxing is in his blood.
And what is he doing? I forget why he's doing it, but he's like doing illegal fights in Mexico.
Yes, because that's the only way he can fight. I mean,
while being kind of off the radar,
and yeah,
right. He's mainly doing it for himself. He is not. He's never shed like his kind of his anger. And
well,
I don't
also not
quite,
using his name, his real name.
Yeah, I don't want to quite talk too much about the thematics because people should experience it. But yeah, he's like he feels illegitimate. That's how he feels. And eventually, what is it that gets him his shot, Nick?
So
there's this kind of he's like a mean dude. The is he Irish?
That
the boxer.
Yeah, he is. But I mean, he goes up against another like heavyweight at the start of his like beginning and loses his car. Then he moves to Philadelphia.
Right, he gets his ass handed to him in an early kind of just little training.
And he wants to train, and he decides who better to train him than Rocky.
What does he want to train for, though?
Just to fight.
Okay,
he just wants to get in the circuit.
Right.
And who better to train him than Rocky, who he thinks... Right. He doesn't owe him, but it's one of those things where definitely he's kind of hitting that since Rocky... Was
Rocky,
there when his
he was in his
died.
Circle of Rocky's kind of drama when his dad died, yeah. And so...
So I think this utilizes the Rocky history in a way that is really well done. Stallone is actually really good, and his connection with Michael B. Jordan, just their kind of...
Oh, man. You know how, like, one of the great things
great
in
chemistry.
Rocky III is the Apollo Creed-Rocky connection.
Yeah.
These two former enemies forming friends. I mean, this is like kind of like... It's pretty simple, conceptual, but those two actors and the script and all that pulled that off in Rocky III. And there's something to be said for the odd man out team ups that they've been doing since the first one with Burgess Meredith.
Yeah,
Somehow they made the formula work again.
But they also introduce a love interest.
There's a love interest who's
why can't I? Oh, I'm blanking on her name.
Tessa Thompson.
Yeah. She's a deeper love interest than you might expect her to be.
Because she's like a rising in the ranks of...
she's like a club singer.
Like
a soul, neo-soul kind of singer.
Yeah.
But she has an issue. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying what it is.
No.
She has it like a...
She's going deaf.
She is slowly going deaf. She has like some kind of a degenerative disease, and she's eventually going to lose her hearing entirely and not be able to sing anymore at all. And I'm like, that is just, it's just a fact. No getting around it. And
she's great.
It's like it means that there's like this kind of weight to their interactions.
Yeah.
And then the other seriousness, because there is always a sort of tragic thing that's going to get in the way
of formula.
It. Is Rocky is dealing with cancer. And it is like, if you ever dealt with it, and everybody has, it's one shape, way, shape, or form.
Not me.
Right. Then you're going to, the serious scenes in this are going to get to you. But he does not really want to fight it.
He's lost contact with his son.
Mm-hmm.
Adrienne has died from cancer herself.
Right.
He has his restaurant. And he's sort of like, I'm done.
Right,
I've done all the things.
Like totally miserable. He's like, I lived a good life.
He lived a good life. The people that he loves have moved on, mm-hmm. and he doesn't mind that end.
Right,
but he gets caught up in this.
Right, Michael B. Jordan, Donnie is like, he's like, if you're training me to fight, well then you're damn well gonna do the same, basically.
Right.
And I know this all sounds very on the nose and stuff like that,
but
believe me, it'll pull you in.
It's in the executions, and also just the fight choreography and the training montages, like you say, they are kind of rousing.
Their update for how Philadelphia looks, the racial makeup, the tricked out bikes of the neighborhood that are like all the
Stallone's like they just running up and down the street. It's like he himself
he's
doesn't
kind of
understand.
A hilarious, a little bit of an old man. He's like, what are these dumb kids doing?
Right.
Which
I feel like is 100% Stallone.
It builds to a great version of the scene from I guess kind of Rocky II, where he like kind of runs with the kids. they have their own take on it in this. There's, you know, they do, there's a change up in music. It's got some of the classic orchestral stuff, but they also break out more hip hop and, you know, let it sound like modern Philadelphia sounds.
By the way,
the fact that I could say one of my favorite scenes is the date he goes on with Tessa Thompson, or the fact that they're initially very adversarial. He goes down, he's annoyed because she's playing her music too loud. He'll eventually find out why she's playing it too loud.
Yep.
And he's like, he's like, I'm trying to sleep. Turn that off.
It was a movie.
And she turns it up.
It was a movie that I didn't expect to like as much as I did. And I watched it with my wife. And she, of course, has seen Rocky. I think she only saw the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And she, a lot of times during a movie, she's on her phone.
Yeah.
That's just kind of her way to.
Yep.
She put her phone down and was like 100% glued to this movie. And I know. When that happens,
yeah.
There's something special about the movie.
And I do think, like, although I've liked most of the Rocky movies, I only ever skipped the one that was about the son. I've heard it's not great.
Yeah.
But everything else has had something of merit. But I think this one is kind of special, even among them. I think it's, for me, maybe second only to the original Rocky.
I agree.
And
although
it is a kind of movie that will grab you.
I do like Rocky 3. I do like
Rocky 3 was the one that I considered my favorite as a kid, and I watched it the most.
Mainly because Dolph Lundgren's a badass. Sorry.
That's Rocky 4.
Oh, that's Rocky 4. Okay, well,
Get out, Nick.
I really like Rocky 4, then. Not Rocky 3.
Mr. T's a badass.
Mr. T is a badass.
Clubber Lang is a badass.
I have a break.
No, Clubber Lang's a bad person.
But by the way, Rocky IV, while I believe is the cheesiest of them, is also tremendously watchable.
Yeah.
You know what happens? Is the Russian man takes steroids and does, like, all this digital weightlifting, stuff like that. It's all super high-tech.
Isn't he, like, punching ice at the beginning of it, though?
Rocky, though, he, like, pulls logs and runs through snow and climbs mountains and stuff like that and escapes the KGB handlers that are, like, watching him.
I'm just saying, Dolph Lundgren
And then you're
kills...
like, oh, yeah, America, yay!
Dolph Lundgren is the guy who killed Creed.
He is.
He's a man not to be trifled.
Now, Nick, I don't know if you want to talk about Creed 2. I kind of don't want to know too much about
it. No, I mean, I will say that Creed...
Dolph Lundgren plays a role, or like his son or whatever.
So, yes, it is basically him and his son are sort of the rivals in Creed 2. And I will say that...
It sounds so cheesy. Like these legacies, like, oh, they're all the sons of the previous boxers, all fighting or teaming up.
So...
It's ridiculous sounding on the surface.
The second one is not as good as the first one.
Okay.
I will say that there is a decline.
That's good to know to go into it.
I hear the
third one is quite good.
I do too. I have too. I don't think the second one is a bad movie by any stretch of imagination. I like what they did with the character of Dolph Lundgren plays and sort of how they set up his son as like a new boxer in the Russian boxing circuit. And I love the continuation of Donnie and Tessa Thompson's character.
Okay, I have to admit I do kind of want to, that would more than anything is something I want to see.
I honestly think it is one of the best romantic relationships I've seen on the big screen, or like in movies in a while.
Yeah.
It feels the most organic.
It's like
and
natural.
Real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I would like to just quick rewind for just a second on one of the things I liked about Creed is that he, you know, I definitely believe toxic masculinity is a thing.
Oh, 100%.
He is non-toxic masculinity. That conversation they have and their date and kind of the way, I even noticed later on they end up at their apartment and they're both listening to headphones and stuff together. Yeah. And I think he says, he's like, it says, I want to kiss you, or can I kiss you, or something like that. It's both super sweet and romantic, but also, like, super consensual. There's not, like, any question about that. He seems like he's into her and interested in her life, and she's not just an appendage for him, you know?
Michael B. Jordan is an amazing actor that I sometimes question his agent on some of the stuff he does. That Tom Clancy TV show for Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
That was not good.
I can see wanting to be in a Tom Clancy thriller.
I get it.
If you get a shot.
I get it. Everything is about franchises, and they want to, like, do...
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's got Creed. I hope they make more of them. I'm excited to see the third one, just to see what he can do as a director.
Yeah.
And how Dragon Ball Z fits into this.
We know that he was a Dragon Ball Z nerd, and that some way that influenced his how he filmed the fights.
So I'm all for it.
Presumably he'll charge up for 20 minutes.
I agree. Randy, what else we got?
All right, so going from the sublime to the ridiculous, we have Cocaine Bear, which Dave has not watched yet, which would imply that he was going to watch it. I don't know if the yet is correct.
I'm not in a hurry.
I wasn't going to watch Cocaine Bear, but the two people I podcast with are bad movie people, and they made me watch it.
Les made you watch it?
Yes. And Nick watched it already, because Nick is a press play person.
So I watched this for one reason and one reason only, is I like Elizabeth Banks. She doesn't make always great stuff.
I like Elizabeth Banks, too.
She's got a fun
like
energy.
A little bit less now.
But this is a bizarre movie.
So this is weird. So what I would say, my quick review is, what a good trailer.
Yeah.
Because as a trailer, it's a really fun movie. It's got that music sting. It's everything that's good about Cocaine Bear is in that trailer.
Yeah.
I gotta say, is it Grandmaster Flash? White Lines was doing a lot of heavy lifting in that trailer. And but it was a well-cut trailer.
But they do, the 90s, sound or the 80s soundtrack of it is pretty great. It takes place in 85.
Okay.
So the soundtrack is good. It's kind of a crazy stacked cast.
Has kids doing cocaine.
I think the thing is, like, most of this movie, and they talk about this in the pitch meeting for it, most of this movie is an Elmore Leonard movie without the snap of Elmore Leonard dialogue. So essentially,
you're on like kind of like witty crime banter kind of stuff movie.
Yeah, basically there's a there's a park ranger who has a crush on the, was he the naturalist or whatever?
Yeah, he's also having something to do with parks and wildlife.
Yeah. So, and she carries a gun.
Well, she's a park ranger.
Sure. There's a single mom. I think she's a single mom, played by Carrie Russell, and her kids have gone missing. And there's a police detective and his dog that he adores, and the deputy type that he's put in charge of the dog, and then there are these criminals and they're all looking for this cocaine, basically.
Yeah.
And in and amongst this, a cocaine-fueled bear is running around occasionally killing people.
Okay.
The cocaine is there because Jonathan Reese?
Matthew
Reese.
So all the people from The Americans are in this.
Yes. He is a DA agent who has basically gone rogue and is dropping bags of cocaine out for the mob to pick up.
Yep.
He dies because his chute doesn't open.
Yep.
And the bear gets a rail or two of one of the cocaine bags and then is just desperate for more.
Well, the thing is, there's not enough cocaine bear for this to be Cocaine Bear. And also, this is one of those things where I either want it to be more wacky or less wacky.
Yeah.
And it doesn't ever hit the balance I think it needs to hit. There's definitely not enough Cocaine Bear in my Cocaine Bear.
I could agree with that.
Also, all the crime stuff, all the story arc of
you're like Jurassic Park's Malcolm, you are going to have some Cocaine Bear.
It opens with Cocaine Bear killing this couple, and I think it's supposed to be funny, but I needed that couple to be awful, because actually it's just kind of terrorizing. I'm like, oh, I feel bad for them. Like,
you recognize the couple, right?
I didn't recognize the lead,
The lead guy is from Game of Thrones. He's the big surly beard man, the wildling.
Yeah. Oh!
I didn't know who the girl was.
Yeah, I didn't recognize the girl.
Okay, yeah, I thought that's who that was. Anyway, they're having a nice little nature hike. They're a couple, and then they get murdered by
the bear. It's traditional to kind of have the first kill of something like that be a little startling, a.k.a. scream.
Yeah. Sure, but it's like, man, I was like, I want the bear to be killing people that are bad people.
Right.
Or hilariously, you know, it starts off with that's actually kind of sad.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's not the tone you want to set for this movie. And I feel like tonally it is all over the place.
I agree.
Like, it wants me to invest in Carrie Russell and her kids, but at the same time not care if they all die.
Randy, what you wanted was the party movie.
I wanted the party movie. Yeah.
I do not think it is a bad movie. I don't think it's a great movie.
I will never watch it again.
Yeah.
But I might watch the trailer again.
I did think the effects of the bear were a little lackluster.
It's
if you're not going to have that bear on too much, CGI you need it to look good when he does show up.
Yep.
I was a little worried about that. He looked a little CG in the trailers, but I was like, oh, they're going to clean that
up.
Nah,
he definitely looks CG. Which, you know, I did like O'Shea Jackson and Alden Emmerich. They're kind
of... when I talked about that Fall, the tower climbing suspense movie, one of the things about that, that didn't have any creatures that they had to animate, but one of the things that like was made it like so difficult for me to watch was that it was like just 100% convincing. I guess all you had to do was like have like great green screen work or whatever they did for those.
You and me are going to go see Fall 2 in the theaters, right?
Oh, we're going to go to the theater, and I will look through with my fingers, and then I will vomit on the floor.
Fall is better than cocaine bear.
That's good. That's good. I suspected it might be.
All right. Dave, you want to talk about Dredge?
Yeah, well, do we want to, like, I know we're running a little long. Do we want to just bump it to next week?
Yeah, let's bump it to next week.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I'll play a little bit more and I'll talk about it then. Right. There's a little indie video game that I'm going to be talking about, but it is a fascinating and weird one.
Yep. All right, that'll wrap it up for us. We'll be back next time with more. And until that time,
yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.